little remark about the commentary. I'm saying that in his youth he wanted to be an architect like his father. That's wrong. His father was not an architect, but it would have been sound very well because of Eisenstein's father. But his father was only, let's say, a construction manager. He was not an architect.
Just one remark, maybe. You mentioned that this is the second of two programs on Fritz Lang that you did, and the first one was done in 1974. That's why we also integrated this one into the program, which is mostly about this earlier moment, 1974, 1975. And one thing that I would be interested in is in how far the technical requirements and the infrastructure had changed between 1974, when you made Die schweren Träume des Fritz Lang, and then 1990. It's still a very tedious and...
I think on a technical level.
Technical level, and also, I mean, has it become easier between those two moments? Because today this would be comparatively easy, but in 1990, I guess it still involves editing tables, and it's very...
The problem, all these movies were on 2-inch tapes. Mm-hmm. And to have a cutter in, a lady who did the cutting, she needed help to move this... Mm-hmm. Between 5 and 10 kilos a piece. And for every little piece from another movie, you had to change it, because you had only one master and one slave. Mm-hmm. That's easier today now. Mm-hmm. Another thing is that changed. In the beginning, working with 2-inch tapes, you couldn't watch it picture by picture. If you wanted to have a single picture, it has to run, and to have to push the button, and maybe it was a picture you wanted. And I did about Samuel Fuller, when his movie 40 Guns had a rerun, and I wanted to have the scene where Barbara Stanwyck is nearly killed by her brother, and there is a close-up where you can see the gun smoke, and I wanted to have this gun smoke. Believe it or not, it needed more than an hour to find this thing. There were only 2 pictures where you could see it. But to find it, you have to try it again and again and again. In the end it worked, but it was difficult. A time you wouldn't have today in a cutting room.
I mean, there's also this very meticulous play with language and the commentary and then the images. And this, I suppose that this needs a lot of experimentation to see, okay, which rhythm does it need? Will I take still images in this part and moving images in this? And today, again, this is probably quite easy technically, but at the time it involves a lot of time to just...
It was an endless time in the sound studio, mm-hmm. to put the commentary in the right place. Mm-hmm. And I had written a commentary, and sometimes it was too short for the cutting. It was too long, so it needed a lot of little changes. Mm-hmm. But it was more or less a game. Mm-hmm. The production of this program was really a game. Let's say the film Moonfleet. I started to cut it up to tell the story, and suddenly, when they are in the well to find the diamond, I said to myself, "That's it. We don't need the rest of the movie." Hmm. Yeah, now he's part of it, so I don't have to tell the complete story. Hmm. And also the end of the Nibelung, nobody survived. Everybody is going to be killed. But I remembered this Göring, who talked at the Nuremberg trial about the Nibelung Troy. Hmm. And I think that was much better together with this homage in the beginning of the movie, Dem Deutschen Volke. Yeah.
There's another thing I would be interested in. You said that these programs were done as an accompaniment. There were Fritz Lang movies that were shown on television, and there's many other places, like many other instances where you would show Lubitsch, and then Enno Patalas did something about Fritz Lubitsch, Ernst Lubitsch, etc. And were these programs always placed at the beginning, just to make people curious for these movies, or was it just when there was time, where the, when there was a slot to put it?
I think it was somewhere in between.
Somewhere in between. Mm-hmm.
I don't remember it very right, but I think it was in between. Yeah. Not at the start. No?
Yeah.
No, it was the idea that people had to see the movie, and we had to explain a lot.
Mm-hmm.
We were obsessed by the idea to explain movies. No? We had the idea that every movie needed an explanation.
You say this with a certain skepticism, as if you saw this differently today.
I'm not sure if all this, but you have to know we made a few hundred programs. Let's say 20, 25 programs survived.
Mm-hmm.
All the other programs, it's better not to see them again. But that's the risk with me. I mean, to have, we had in the beginning, in the winter time, we had every week a program. In the summertime, every 14 days.
Mm-hmm.
So these are around between 30 and 40 programs a year. How are we going to make 40 very good programs? It was always a risk, but it was also very interesting. We had to ask people to do something.
Mm-hmm.
We had to think, maybe he is the right one to do something. It was not that we had only five programs and thinking endless about it. It has to be done.
Mm-hmm.
It was not endless thinking about who could do it. Mm-hmm. We had to decide it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was necessary that he had the time to do it. And so it was also a kind of improvisation.
Mm-hmm.
It was not this kind of planning where you have only a few time slots mm-hmm. and you can work endless on the preparation.
Mm-hmm.
No, it was just to jump into the water.
You said before in your introduction, you said you might also speak about individual choices of films, and I think the choice of M and the way M is treated is very interesting, because you very much make a case against a certain kind of reception where people take it for granted that he is the murderer, and it's something that seems to be attempted also at, let's say, film studies or film criticism, where people take this as if there was evidence, and then you say it's not as simple as that.
It's everybody is sure he is the killer,
hmm.
but it needs a lawyer,
mm-hmm.
and a good lawyer would, let's say, James Stewart,
hmm.
in the case of a murder, we would find out there is no proof. There is no proof of it. And there's one very interesting story. The film was originally, when he was censored, it was 5 or 6 minutes longer. This 5 or 6 minutes disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time, the censorship, they had to make cards with all the dialogues. So we know the dialogues
mm-hmm.
about this minute.
Mm-hmm.
And these minutes are in a newspaper where people call, "I'm the killer."
Mm-hmm.
And from the text you read, it must have been a little bit funny.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Fritz Lang found this is too much. It's mm-hmm. too much fun about it, because he himself believed that he's the killer.
Mm-hmm.
But because it was unable to show a killing in the cinema at that days. And so there is no killing. It's
mm-hmm.
behind something. It's mm-hmm. hidden.
Mm-hmm.
And so even when Peter Lorre is in front of the mirror and makes this gesture with his face, everybody says, "This is horror."
Mm.
I can also say, childish.
Mm.
Children are going to do this. And he has a kind of childish behavior.
Mm.
So I would reopen the case.
Maybe you would question, and then we can, of course, also open it up to the audience. One question which concerns the film department as a group. How do we have to think about this? I mean, there were three or four other commissioning editors, and to me, from today, it seems as if there was some kind of a shared idea or a shared enthusiasm, cinephilia, so that it becomes something like, as if there was even something like authorism of this film department. Is this correct, or is it more complicated?
It's a little bit more complicated, because everybody was thinking about our editorial stuff for people. They always say the same, they always think the same, but that's not the truth. We had a lot of arguments about everything.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, we had enough time slots for movies and for programs about the movies that everybody could do what he was thinking. Mm-hmm. That's right. We did, Hartmut Pitomsky did a 90-minute program about John Ford. But half of the editorial staff said, he's the wrong one to do it. Mm-hmm. So we did a second one. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Mm-hmm. A second one where the author found out that he is a very heavy Catholic. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Also a very interesting program.
Today there's a lot of talk also with legal issues. I know that with the John Ford thing, which entirely consists of excerpts from John Ford's movies, it would probably involve a lot of clearing of rights today if you wanted to really show this and on television. I think in the 70s it was not that difficult. Is that
it true? Was a problem, and we found solutions. Mm-hmm. Because the first channel bought researchers mm-hmm. with a lot of admissions. Mm-hmm. So we said to them, we show the movie twice. Mm-hmm. One, the complete movie. And the second one, we put a few pieces inside. And it worked very well. Mm-hmm. I remember that a few people called the station asking, why do you put all this little thing into the movie? That was not a problem. On the other hand, if we had a movie under contract, mm-hmm. we could use 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. That was not a problem. If there was no contract, it meant a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And a lot of projects were impossible because of the money. Mm-hmm. But in 58 or 56, there was a big trial with the biggest film Händler.
Film Händler, what's Film Händler? Film. Well, like people who deals with films, film dealer?
It was a big company in Munich.
Was it a distributor? Not really.
No. It
was someone who makes money with.
It was Kirsch. Mm. He had the rights for hundreds of Hollywood movies, and he watched very careful TV programs to find if something has been used. Mm-hmm. And another TV station, they used from a movie, he had the contracts, 5 minutes. And then he sent, maybe they had forgotten to clear the rights. So Kirch, the company, sent them mm-hmm. an invoice. Mm-hmm. This invoice was so big that the lawyer said, no, we go to court. Mm. It went to court, and the company in Munich lost it. Mm. And then they tried it again in the next court, but that was the last possible station. And again they lost it. Mm. And the judges made such a catalog about it, how to use mm-hmm. film clips. Mm-hmm. And from then on, we had no problems any longer. Mm. Because I remember we bought from Mark Rappaport his Rock Hudson movie mm-hmm. and his movie
Gene Seberg, from the Drawings of Gene Seberg.
The Gene Seberg movie. The Gene Seberg movie, 90 minutes, mostly Hollywood movies. No problem. It was no problem. Mm-hmm. And the lawyers, I'm not sure if the lawyers have today the courage to do the same. At that time, they had a bad conscience, because before this judgment, they told us, if a program is only made out of film clips, that's not possible. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And suddenly, they helped us. Mm-hmm. The only thing they permanently asked, you have to say us what we can say in case of. Mm-hmm. how
to argue.
Yeah, yeah. Why is it necessary to mm-hmm. to show this scene. But they helped us. I'm not sure if they'd like to do it today.
Yeah. Any comments, questions from the audience? Yes, please.
You've used the term improvisation a couple of times, and I wondered whether you could talk a bit further about how different that was to the way you'd normally approach.
Improvisation?
We used the term improvisation a couple of times, and I wondered if you could talk a little bit about how that was different approach to how you might normally approach.
You mean the improvisation of this busy material during the the cutting? The only thing I knew, I would talk about this five movies. I would use these two interviews. I had a few photos, and that's it. And then it started really in the cutting room. I knew these movies very well. And I started to, normally I went from the beginning to the end through a movie, shortened it, made it a little bit longer. And then I improvised the text, a few texts I had before, a few texts I had to do afterwards. There are a lot of quotations, but how to make the footnotes in a movie, these are
there's Freud, is there probably?
Freud and Thomas Mann. But I like it. I hope the talking, the German talking, is a little bit different so that you feel that it's some kind of quotations. I also like the idea to have two voices, not to give it a linear structure, the commentary, just to have little pieces, this and this and this, or speculation, a question and the answer, to make it maybe also easier to listen to it.
If I remember correctly, the 1974 one is just one voice, right? Or is it's not
that's
dialogically?
That's one voice.
Yeah, I have a question about, I guess, audiences. When you're making these films, I mean, who was the audience that you kind of perceived? Because now when we see video essays, they feel very aimed at, like, cinephiles, and I was wondering who your kind of ideal audience was when you were making this, or your perceived audience.
I haven't understood the question.
If there was a particular audience that you were thinking of...
No. But on the other hand, there was a there was a very special audience. In the earlier days, there were no VHS or something. People asked for manuscripts, the text. So the office was always filled up. And day by day, the post was filled up with all these manuscripts. And most of these manuscripts went to cities with a specific postcode.
Just so four-digit postcodes, which means like...
So
small
we could
cities.
See, these were not the big cities, small cities, villages. And so we found out that there are people on the countryside and in little towns, they were really hungry for culture. It really worked. And I remember also a very personal shock when I went for the first time, I lived in Berlin, I found out that going to a movie, it would be enough after screening. To see this or this. And I came from the province, and we always had the problem to explain the movies and to think about it. Yeah? So there was it was more serious in the province and in small cities now.
Were there other kinds of reactions from the audience? I mean, like letters from people who had seen these programs?
I know colleagues that said it's not allowed to make movement slower. And I said, this is a kind of quotation. There are a few purists that said this goes too far to make this material and to change the speed.
But it's very transparent. I mean, nobody would think that this is in Fritz Lang's movie. It's like you see that it's a treatment of the movie. It's an alteration. Yes, please.
You said every movie needs an explanation. And quoting Adorno, that an essay is transgression, there's always a risk. One has to take a risk. And I just, because it sounds as though you're speaking for the movie, you're speaking on behalf of the movie or the filmmaker. So this is a kind of ethical question. And I just wonder how you found your orientation, political and ethical orientation, to speak on behalf of of a film.
Let's talk about the Nibelungen. The Nibelungen was for the film critics, for Krakow and all the other people. It was more or less a movie that had a fascist tendency. It was also the movie for the right wing people, and also the so-called Nibelungen-treue, this was really for the nationalists. You know. The funny thing is, if you watch the movie very careful, it's about lies, it's about betraying, it's about killing. There is nothing seriously. The hero is an idiot. Yeah? And this is also in the book by Tom Cunning about Lang. I like to read that he was on the same line about the movie. And sometimes you have the movie to be free from his historical framework. Yeah? And even Lang, before he went to America, he was not a left-wing person. He was a political person after he had to leave Germany. And he, in one interview, he mentions that he was part of a kind of cooperation between filmmakers that were right-wing filmmakers that were at that time members of the Nazi Party. And he was also a member. That's why he says here, I was not in a function of something. It's the same with Peter Lorre. Also Fritz Lang said he is a killer. The movie is not a proof that he is a killer. Mm. And that's so that's changed the position. I mean, I love this movie Moonfleet. Really everybody hates it. It's childish, whatever.
In France, I think many
in
people
France,
love it.
In France, of course. No? Because that's why the producer of the Houseman talked about these perverse French people that like this movie.
Serge Danet, I think he was one of the most famous advocates of the movie.
Yeah.
L'exercice a été profitable. Any more? Yes, please, Jenny.
I'm just wondering if we can delve a little bit more into what you were saying about the function of these programs, which were to kind of educate. And when you were saying that, I was sort of thinking about, you know, the role of television in part in the dialogue or helping the sort of transition from the young German film to the new German cinema in the 1970s when you're working. But which then sort of taps into the new German sort of thesis about the fatherless society, and you know how these films are kind of functioning as a way of kind of educating an audience about you know German filmmakers, you know, and especially German filmmakers, you know, prior to 1933.
Yeah. In a certain way, we were saying that we are teachers. When Hartmut Pitomsky made a program about John Ford, our politics was, he is the right director, because there was a left-wing critic that was thinking he is a reactionary, he made horrible movies, no, this Western are lousy. And we said the opposite, because it was at that time also our understanding of the movies in opposition to critics that were still writing and still alive. So it was also, we tried to find our position in these programs, and very often in opposition to the contemporary film critic. In the end, we were close partners to this magazine Film Critic, but also this was very complicated, because in the magazine Film Critic, there was a debate between the left,
the political left,
and the so-called aesthetic right,
that
were under the influence of structuralism and the Russian formalism. And so we were opportunistic enough to engage both parties. But it was not one line. And also in our editorial stuff, everybody was thinking they're all the same. Yeah. But it's not the truth. We had also very heavy discussions about is Howard Hawks, what is it with Howard Hawks? Yeah. Is it good or not? What kind of America is this? No? And unfortunately, we liked him.
And was there some kind of pressure? I mean, you would probably have to argue this against the bosses and other things? I mean, or was it just like mixing successful things, things that please the audience, and then smuggling in other things that are less?
Yeah, first hand, we were in this wonderful position with all these feature films. We were successful.
Mm-hmm.
We were normally more successful than other programs.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the shadow of this book, mm-hmm. we had all these problems about the cinema.
Mm-hmm.
There were critics. There were critical articles in the newspapers about it. The, let's say, by John Ford,
mm-hmm.
the critics found out this. This is a very reactionary program.
Mm-hmm.
And also I did another program with Hartmut Witomski about the early cinema.
Mm-hmm.
And we explained nothing.
Mm.
We just showed material, film clips, and pictures. And they said, there were furious about it, that we are not, going to be the teachers.
Mm. Maybe just one more question, which comes back to the Strašek program. Not only that it is 5 episodes, but also, I mean, it must have been a very work-intensive project, and this also involves a certain budget. He has to have done lots of research, invested a lot of time. Was there, an adequate budget to finance these things?
For
Film Immigration?
I think not for him.
Hmm.
Because he was paid to do these 5 programs.
Hmm.
The work he did years before,
hmm.
it was not paid by my television.
Yeah.
So he got a salary for every program,
mm-hmm.
and there was a shooting trip
mm-hmm.
in Europe and one in the United States,
mm-hmm.
so it was not so expensive.
Mm-hmm.
It was not a very expensive program.
Mm-hmm.
It needed a lot of time at the cutting table,
mm-hmm.
but that's not a problem, because that was not our budget.
Mm-hmm.
Today it would be impossible. Today we have for 45 minutes maybe 1 or 2 week, and the filmmaker has to prepare everything at home.
Mm.
No.
It's been a long afternoon. I
remember seeing sort of short film, I think it was probably quite film tips, but mine have been later, that actually talked about films that were in the cinema
mm-hmm.
at the time and were shown before feature.
And were they made when you were commissioning editor? There were short explanatory
films about current releases.
She's talking about Film Tip, the Formant. Yeah. That was mostly Helmut Merker, I think, who was responsible for it, but it's shifted.
He was most time the commissioning editor for it, but we all did some.
Mm-hmm.
I also did a few.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, in this case, I think it's interesting, they are varying in length. And the requirement is that there's something else, like there's a movie which is 83 minutes long, and then you need something for the 7 minutes to fill the slot. And I think in many cases for these programs, those small programs about cinema were exactly to fill these small slots. And Film Tip, I mean, they did more than 300 until, maybe it even exists still, I'm not sure. Film Tip? With Helmut
there
Mathis,
is a kind, there's a kind of
like
the problem with these very short programs about a movie that a lot of distribution companies only send us the trailers for the movies. But we refused to use trailers, we wanted to have the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very often an argument. And a few times we couldn't do it because we were on today. We see always trailers on TV. In so-called critical programs, in cultural magazines, you see only the trailers done by the producers and the distribution companies.
Yeah. But Harun Farocki, for instance, he did a few Film Tips. One is on Straub-Huillier, Totes Empedocles, which doesn't use any footage of the film at all. It's just a conversation with the leading actor. And another one is on Tee im Harem des Archimedes. So sometimes Witomski, Farocki and others, but in other cases it would be film critics, like Christina Nord did some, Rainer Gansera. There's a few within this project that I started with. We interviewed some of the people who did Film Tips, about this work, and I think it's interesting. I mean, as I said, there's more than 300, and some of them are not as good as others, but it's interesting per se to have this short format.
And the other thing is, if you would have put all the directors and authors together, it would not be a friendly meeting, because there were a lot of arguments between them, even if they wrote all for the same magazine. But there was a lot of arguments, so sometimes I would ask, you work with him? You want to? And we, and we worked with all of them.
Okay, yeah, there was another.
Maybe it doesn't fit into this context, but so I was thinking that I remember the first time I bought a DVD and it had this this alternative soundtrack where they would have basically an explanation of the film. I thought that was very interesting.
Oh, yeah.
And then you know, this sort of the format evolved, but now the new format is essentially Netflix. So the new format is essentially, you know, Amazon Video and Netflix, and I haven't found any of this sort of explanatory soundtrack, right? So
which is kind of
I mean, it's an alternative format of what you're saying, Kate.
I like this idea. Very often it's what you buy when they normally have a commentary from the beginning to the end. It doesn't work. But they are wonderful things. Jack Nicholson did something for what's the title? Reporter.
Professional reporter.
And it's marvelous to listen to him when he talks about the shooting of the movie. But that's happened when, not very often, that it's really brilliant. Good.
It's true, it might be in a format that is approaching extinction, maybe.
Yeah.
When there's no longer DVDs or Blu-rays, what happens to the voice-over commentary by the director, the actor, etc.? Maybe we should set up a petition to UNESCO.
There's
two more programs in this series, so maybe we should just make a cut and then invite everyone to Monday's programs. Thank you very much for all of you for staying so long and for commentaries and everything. Thanks.
And thank you so much for putting together the program. So please join me to thank you.